Welcome to Career Tools. This week, I am a people person. Part two. The questions discussed answers are, how do I get ahead if I am a people person? What are the downsides of being a people person? And what should I look out for if I'm a people person?
I am super excited to be able to announce to y'all that there is a Manager Tools chatbot. We've decided it's a he. He is not ready for prime time just yet, but we have two ways for you to find out more this November. First, Mike Ozen will be hosting a pop-up executive speaker series session on November 30th, in which he'll dive into the development process of our revolutionary MT chatbot, and we'll answer all of your questions. Once he's shared how far that chatbot has come, Mike will also be sharing exciting details about where we're headed next. We believe that the most forward-thinking members of our audience are part of the Executive Speaker Series, and that's why we're offering them exclusive access to the use of our chatbot in return for their feedback and contribution to our vision. In order to have access to Mike's session, the video replay, and the chatbot itself, you must have purchased the Executive Speaker Series access before November 30th. Don't wait. Purchase by going to the website and selecting Executive Speaker Series from the product drop-down menu.
Sarah, last week we talked about cultivating adaptability and working on your own. And this week we're going to pick up with focusing on the detail.
Exactly. People-focused persons tend not to worry about the details of a project because those are task-focused things, not people-focused things. Who cares whether there's 10 people invited to the meeting or 12 people invited to the meeting? As long as my two colleagues, Joe and Brian, are there, doesn't have to worry. Don't have to matter about who's going to be actually at the project meeting, which, let's be clear, actually does matter. Because what if the room only has 10 chairs and you only ordered lunch for 10 people and then 12 people show up? Sometimes the details really do matter.
Yeah. The spreadsheets and documents and systems and timelines are all secondary in your mind to the people.
It'll come together. Involved. Take care of the people. The work will do itself.
Yeah. It'll work out on the night. As long as everybody's happy, the details can be worked out later. And unfortunately for you, the details do matter and they have to be worked out. Usually sooner rather than later. Because how many people are going to be at a meeting and how many lunches you've ordered matters. Because you are going to have to answer to your boss and a VP as to why there weren't enough lunches. And the VP didn't get one and you did. Not every problem, even seemingly simple ones like lunches, can be fixed at the last minute with a bit of magic and talking to the right person. And it is far better for you to work on details in small portions earlier than to try and catch up all at once and use your little bit of fairy dust that you usually use at the last minute to help solve those problems. For a start, you're more likely to catch your own mistakes if you work on things in small portions earlier. And secondly, the longer you leave it, the bigger the task becomes and the more daunting it becomes. If you have a project and you've got a week's worth of tasks and you need them all till Friday, you've got a week's worth of tasks to do. If you do some on Monday and some on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, then there's only one day's worth of tasks each day. And it sounds like we're talking to five-year-olds, but professionals, adults, do this too. And we tell ourselves, it's because I'm busy. It's because I was in meetings. It's because I had other things to do. And we still get in our own way and make our lives harder.
Oh, yeah.
Even though we could make it easier for ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, it's much easier to simply slide two chairs into a meeting room than slide two chairs in and find two extra lunches, one of which is gluten-free. And you're right now, there's all these things that pile up and it makes it much harder to be successful. All of us all the time adapt to last minute requests, right? And those last minute changes and those, oh, dang, I forgot this thing. And it's so much easier when there's only one thing than there's a bunch of things to possibly derail.
Right. Things are going to go wrong anyway. So why make a whole bunch of things
on top of the one thing that is already going to go wrong? Exactly. So as we've already suggested, since as a people person, you're not likely to be enthusiastic or good with details, do that work alone. And then have someone who is good at details check your work. Now, you're going to have to steal yourself the criticism, because there's bound to be some. And if you go into this knowing you've made some mistakes, it's going to be less upsetting when they're found. Assume, hey, I'm giving this person a draft one. There's going to be mistakes in it. Don't get your feelings hurt in advance. Assume there are going to be mistakes. I just need this other person's help to identify where those mistakes are. Think of it like giving your more detailed colleague a find the difference puzzle. You're not so much giving them a chance to find your mistakes. It's kind of like a quiz. Hey, there are mistakes here. Where do you think these mistakes are? Because you're not going to be perfect. None of us are perfect. Assume that this is just an activity in helping me make this better, not calling out my errors.
You and I talked last week about the different ways that people think about things and the complete opposite ways we think about things. And we never realize that people think in the complete differently, the complete opposite way we do. And so people and task focus people think about small details completely differently. So other people think of the accuracy of small details as the barometer of the accuracy of the whole. Whereas people focus people think of the accuracy of the whole as being more important. So like your boss, if he's a task focus people, will focus on the cell in his spreadsheet where you have Thursday instead of Tuesday and extrapolate that the whole spreadsheet must be riddled with errors that you've not seen.
Uh-huh.
And once he's seen that small error, he can no longer trust anything on that spreadsheet. That one cell means to him that nothing is trustworthy on that spreadsheet. It's like once you've seen one fly in your soup, nothing in the restaurant is edible. You can't eat anything. Whereas you think, it's one mistake. It's like 2 days. Why?
Yeah.
Like, chill. It's fine. It's like, overall, does it make sense?
Yeah.
You are looking at it from completely different angles. And unfortunately, when that's your boss is right, even if he's wrong.
I think an example of this one, Wendy, when managers, professionals, individuals who are responsible for hiring, right, reviewing resumes, are in a position to review resumes, almost all of us, and we don't even know why, almost all of us, when we see an error in a resume, a spelling mistake, grammatical issue in it, that if we've got enough resumes that we can afford to, we immediately put that one in the note pile.
Yeah.
And most of us, because we're not taught and we don't fully understand why that's something we do, most of us don't realize the reason for that is lack of attention to detail. One small spelling error in a person's resume is representative of probably more errors. And if you're a people-focused person, you probably know in reviewing resumes, if you have a ton of them, the first thing you do is anyone with a spelling error goes in the note pile. And that's why.
Because it's supposed to be your best work.
Yeah.
And if this is an example of your best work, then it's not very good.
Right. And it's like, it's just, it's a small, tiny indicator and it's not always right.
Mm-hmm.
But that indicator is like a beacon for attention to detail. It's kind of that same concept. So if your boss is a task-focused person, you've got to make sure that all of the small details are solid, like they're clear 100% before you present, because otherwise your whole presentation will be shot if you don't. And they discover one small error, which again, to Wendy's point, it's like you pull out a string and the whole thing unravels. There must be mistakes everywhere. It's riddled with error, which it's probably not. But again, this is that indicator that causes people to suspect more errors exist. Now, alternately, what you can do is present, instead of one final 100% accurate product, present in stages with the highest level idea first, And a caveat that there's going to be a lot of assumptions that you're going to need to test and work through and present data as you go, so that ultimately through the course of time, all will be revealed, but you don't know everything 100% right now. So that's a way to kind of get around it, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be 100% right today. You might not have 100% of the detail, but say that up front. This is what we know now. These are the things we do not know. I'll bring more to you as we figure out the answers to these unknowns. And that can help with that lack of information and still having all of the information.
That's one way to get around that.
All organizations need effective managers. You'd be surprised the breadth of industries we serve. Educational, healthcare, technology, manufacturing, software, logistics, biosciences, pharma, communications, government, nonprofit, you name it. We've probably helped a client that does what you do. From small business to large, we've seen them all. If you're interested in finding out how we can support your managers, contact Maggie. Her email address, maggie@manager-tools.com.
The next recommendation is consider how other people work or think before you propose action. So if you haven't got this by now, thinking about how other people think. So you might have been surprised in the previous section that we recommended that you do the brainstorming section of a project alone. Because isn't brainstorming when you get everybody together? Isn't that the definition of it? Actually, in his book, Your Creative Power, Alex Osborne, who originally described the technique, titles the chapter, How to Organize a Squad to Create Ideas. So the man who invented brainstorming describes it as a squad to create ideas. So it's got to be about a group, right?
Exactly. However, the way brainstorming is commonly done, it just doesn't work for everyone. Not everyone thinks, much less communicates, on their feet, on the spot, right? For a lot of people, walking into a room and being asked to throw out some ideas is an incredibly daunting experience. Their minds immediately go blank. I've got no words to say. I cannot think of a single good idea. I had 17 before I entered this room, and now I'm a complete idea vacuum. I've got nothing to contribute. Because some people, more task-focused people, don't necessarily think the same way you do. Their brains don't operate in the same fashion. When they go into a brainstorming activity, their minds aren't filled with all of these ideas the way yours is. Rather, their mind is immediately vacant of all of the ideas. So that means for some individuals, brainstorming is actually a poorer method of idea generation, not a richer one. It doesn't work for everyone all the time.
So you can adapt your preference for getting everyone together to their preference for thinking alone by giving them the topic ahead of time and allowing them to think about their ideas for a few days before coming to the brainstorming session. So instead of coming with no idea of what you're going to suggest as the brainstorming topic, you give them the topic and that allows them to write a few things down and they can mull it over for a few days and they will feel 100% more confident and comfortable with that activity. And you will get 100% more ideas out of them than you would if you spring it on them. And in fact, weirdly, this was one of the recommendations that Alex Osborne makes in his book. So he
with
actually
the whole squad.
Yeah, with the squad. He says, tell the squad ahead of time what you're going to be brainstorming about. So, you know, it's just that apparently somewhere along the line, that part of the message got lost.
You know, Wendy, I don't actually know. And there might not be an answer to this. Do you know, is there any indicator between an individual's DISC profile and whether or not they like surprises? Ooh. Because this kind of feels a little bit that way, right?
Yeah.
It kind of feels a little bit like that. It's like, I find that just because we talk a lot in our conferences about brainstorming, mm-hmm. one of the things I suggest to more task-focused managers is, or sorry, more people-focused managers is, give the more task-focused and or more reserved managers a heads up before you brainstorm, because they'll come with better ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I get from people the, wait a minute, doesn't that defeat the purpose of brainstorming? No, brainstorming is not a surprise. It's not meant to be a surprise. Like, it's meant to generate ideas, not to be a surprise.
Right.
There's almost no value that comes from the surprise bit. No, it's not a party. Yeah, it's not a party. It's not. There's almost no value that comes from the surprise bit. It's not like better ideas come immediately. Now, maybe they do for some people, but also giving people prior warning doesn't force anybody to prepare. Some people just will, the ones that want to, and some people just won't, the ones that have better ideas on the spot, right? It's that.
Yeah, I think so. The only person I know who definitely doesn't like surprises is a high S. So people focus but reserved.
Yeah.
I don't have enough data to say, but I would think that reserved people wouldn't like surprises just because it makes them the center of attention in general.
Maybe. Yeah, but, I don't know.
But I think
I don't know. It's kind of that.
We have to do some more research.
I don't know. Brainstorming is not a surprise. Yeah. Basically is what we're saying here.
Yes,
so,
definitely.
Exactly. Now, here's a list of some other actions you might propose because they feel comfortable to you that may not be comfortable to other people. So, for example, people who are people-focused have a tendency to say, let's just wing it, which is not comfortable to everybody. Speaking in front of a group is not comfortable to everybody. Meeting and having a conversation over a meal, not comfortable to everyone. Working off schedule, not comfortable to everyone. Not following the established process or procedure that may be in place, again, uncomfortable. Waiting for other people to catch up and missing deadlines because of it. Missing deadlines generally, to be clear, is something that's quite uncomfortable for many. And using more casual language in more formal settings. Again, really natural to people-focused persons, these types of behaviors, not necessarily naturally comfortable to everyone.
Friend of mine, we were in an airport and somebody did something. Can't even remember what they did. My friend turned around to me and said, did they not see the sign? There are rules. Yes, they did see the sign. They ignored the rules. That's other people do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they were having a conversation, they were enthralled. How many times has anybody who's listening to this podcast right now been through airport security? And then someone's bag gets pulled and you're like, there's a bottle of water in it.
Yes.
Everyone knows you're not allowed water. Everyone knows. Now, some people saw the sign as they're walking up to airport security and like, oh, dang, I might have water. And they threw it in that trash can that's usually about 10 to 15 feet before you go through security. Mm-hmm. A bunch of other people just have like bottles of water squirreled away and didn't look for them and then had their bags checked.
And the people who follow the rules are really uncomfortable at the thought that they might not have followed the rules.
Right? How embarrassing to be, to have your bag stopped because you had water in it. And the people focus, people are like,
whatever.
It's fine. Whatever. It's just a bottle of water.
So if you're with somebody and you're saying, oh, it's all right, that rule exists, but we're just going to ignore it, and you're leading a project and the people on your project, you are encouraging to just ignore that rule, that you are making those people incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah. And those people are, we can assume, roughly 50%, almost everywhere.
Exactly.
So I'm assuming half of the people.
So this is the last point, and it might shock you, but consensus is not necessary. So people-focused people find decision-making harder than task-focused people because they want to have consensus before a decision is made. And shockingly, you don't need everyone to agree to a plan to move ahead. Task-focused people, especially high Ds, so they're task-focused and assertive, are entirely okay with making decisions that others don't agree with because they base their decisions on data. And someone else's opinion or feeling doesn't trump their data. So they're okay with the people disagreeing because the data or what they're basing their decision on is fact, and therefore people's feelings are irrelevant. And so the decision is easy. For people-focused people, that's a really difficult thing to grasp.
Yeah, I also find, Wendy, oftentimes people-focused people, D's included, they'd rather there be a decision than that decision be the right one. Like I said, I don't care what the answer is. Just tell us. I do not care.
Yeah.
And that can sometimes, I find, be a bit of a jarring experience for a people-focused person.
Mm-hmm.
In that they want everyone to have an opinion or a desire or feel a way. And sometimes task-focused people do not, like, it doesn't matter. It's completely irrelevant, indifferent over here. I would suggest if you're a task-focused person and are listening to this, it's better, more well-received, I'm going to say, to say I'm indifferent than it is to say I don't care.
Yes.
Because care is an emotive word in that it isn't always as well-received as you mean it to. I agree. I don't care. I also don't care. I do not care. But I've found indifferent can be a better word because sometimes people-focused people will have an emotional response to you saying, I don't care, when really what you mean is, it doesn't matter to me.
Yes.
Either way is fine.
Either way.
Exactly. So as long as you get organizational approval, that is, you have approval from your boss, then you can proceed with your plan, right? That is going to this consensus thing. As long as you have approval from the organization, you can proceed. You don't need to have full consensus on our plan or our approach forward. And frankly, you'll never please all of the people all the time. And if you wait until you do, it will take you so long to get anything done. You will never be able to implement anything, and your career is going to suffer for it because there's always going to be someone or some people in some circumstances that don't agree or who aren't on side. The most important person's approval for any decision is that of your boss. As long as you've got that, then you can proceed.
And if you are a people-focused person and you're reserved to a high S in the MTDS model, this is going to be incredibly difficult for you because you don't like to move forward without being sure that everyone's on the same page and without confidence that no feathers are being ruffled. But long term, this is going to hold you back because it's just not realistic to get everything done if you're just going to wait for everybody to agree, because literally nothing will ever get done if you wait for everybody.
Exactly. It'll slow you down for sure. So in order to get yourself primed for, prepared for this, because again, it's going to be uncomfortable, you can practice by making small decisions. As small as, example, where are we going to go for lunch today? Without getting full consensus. Now, it sounds silly to practice, but you don't want the first decision you have to make without having full consensus to be something huge that you have to do in your very first managerial role ever. I mean, that's going to pinch a lot more than we're going to choose a lunch place that not everyone agrees with. So, practice on small, less important decisions now. Imagine never having made a decision or taking an action without having absolutely everyone's approval and then having to introduce a team reorganization that you know is going to upset some people on the team. I mean, that'll break you. Mm-hmm. That will overwhelm you, especially when being a new manager is overwhelming by itself. This is overwhelming on top of overwhelming. So starting small now will help you practice. It'll strengthen that muscle a little bit.
And if you are a manager, some more notes on other things which are not necessary. So harmony, conflict-free, and friendship between all the members of your team. Managers who are people-focused often desire these traits for their own relationships, and then they want their teams to have these traits between them. And a team doesn't need to have harmony or be conflict-free or have friendships in order to be successful. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the teams that are conflict-free are probably not successful, because the friction is what the spark that starts fires. Sometimes it takes an argument between two people to find the imagination, to find the solution that starts something new.
That's exactly it. So if we judge the situation by the numbers of positive and negative articles that we're reading online, based upon what we're reading out there, folks, note, you'd think that being a people person is easy. I mean, you got it made. because a lot of the world around us is telling us that being more people focused is the way to go. Just be a people person and success is all yours. The world is your oyster, friend, which is not necessarily true. As a people person, you have a hard time with the results part of career success. And your relationships come easy to you, but you've got to work on the results piece of it. Hopefully, in our two parts here together, we've done a little bit to help you address some of those concerns.
Thanks, Sarah.
All right. Thank you, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic.